severe tropical storm Maring pounds parts of Luzon, killing at least 9 people. The ombudsman dismisses the graft complaint filed against former tourism chief Juan Dateo. Presidential candidate Senator Pancho Lacson calls out the Social Welfare Department for poor planning in the disbursement of social amelioration funds. We'll talk to Senator Lacson about that later on in the program. And the World Health Organization recommends COVID-19 booster shots for immunocompromised individuals. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Hey, thanks for joining us. And for those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, nice to have you with us today. Topping the midday news, bad weather wreaking havoc in parts of Luzon. In the province of Palawan, at least 4 people are dead after flash floods hit several villages. Search and rescue operations are ongoing for at least 4 others. 60 people have been rescued so far. The flooding affected a total of 11 villages. Nearly 300 families are currently staying at evacuation centers. Several more casualties are being reported in various provinces as severe tropical storm Maring continues to drench parts of northern Luzon. In Benguet, 3 children were reported killed following a landslide. In Cagayan Province, 1 casualty was also reported. As of this morning, government's disaster mitigation agency said there were already 9 deaths due to Maring. Authorities also assessing the damage incurred from the storm.
We have an estimated rough estimate, po, initial estimate of 14 million damages to our crops and 353,000 pesos for our livestock. Now we still experience some electricity problem in our 12 municipalities and some closed road closures, and we have instructed our engineering office to do road clearing. And right now, also our provincial welfare has dispatched our mobile kitchen to provide hot meals to our constituents and our evacuees.
In the town of Gonzaga in Cagayan, local police conducted forced evacuation due to Maring. In La Union, rescue teams were deployed to inundated towns. Landslides were also reported in Pugo town, forcing authorities to shut down one road going to Marcos Highway. Floods also hit parts of Ilocos Norte as the region experienced heavy rains caused by severe tropical storm Maring. Let's check on the situation there now with Grace Alba. Grace, go ahead.
Yes, good morning. Good afternoon. Severe tropical storm Maring continues to bring heavy rainfall in the province of Ilocos Norte. In Barangay Saud Pagudpud, Ilocos Norte, around 20 houses got flooded as the creek in the said barangay overflowed yesterday morning. Overnight rains also caused flooding in some barangays in Candon City and Narvacan, Ilocos Sur. In Candon City, some parts of Barangay San Jose and Barangay Waitaya were submerged in floods. Heavy rains also triggered floods in some areas in Barangay Santa Cruz, Narvacan, and Kusur.
Grace?
Yes? Hello?
All right. Yeah, I think we lost our connection there with our correspondent, Grace Alba. Thank you, Grace, for joining us this afternoon. You take care and keep safe. From there, we're now going to get the latest on the movement of the storm, which is expected to exit the Philippine area of responsibility by today. We have on the line now PAGASA weather forecaster Ariel Rojas. Ariel, what else can you tell us?
Hi, good afternoon, Carmina. At 11 a.m., the severe tropical storm Maring is already out of the Philippine area of responsibility at a distance of 345 kilometers west of Calayan, Cagayan. It continues to pack winds of up to 100 kilometers per hour near its center and with gusts reaching up to 125 kilometers per hour. It is presently moving westward at a speed of 20 kilometers per hour. While it's already out of our area of monitoring, tropical cyclone wind signals are still in effect due to its expansive wind field. Tropical cyclone wind signal number 2 is in effect over Batanes, Cagayan, including Zimbabwean Islands, the northern portion of Isabela, Apayao, Kalinga, Mountain Province, Abra, Ilocos Norte, and Ilocos Sur. These areas will continue to expect damaging winds, while Tropical Cyclone Wind Signal Number 1 remains hoisted over the rest of Isabela, Nueva Vizcaya, Quirino, Ifugao, Benguet, La Union, Pangasinan, Aurora, Nueva Ecija, Tarlac, Zambales, Pampanga, Bulacan, the northern portion of Bataan, and the northern portion of Quezon, including Puliliu Islands. These areas will also be experiencing strong winds. Meanwhile, in terms of rainfall, heavy to intense rains will continue to be expected over Ilocos Region, Benguet, Ifugao, Abra, and Mountain Province. Moderate to heavy rains are also likely over Zambales, Bataan, Tarlac, and the rest of Cordillera Administrative Region, while light to moderate with at times heavy rains are expected over Metro Manila, Cagayan Valley, and the rest of Central Luzon. Because Maring is pulling in the Habagat, we are also expected to have monsoon rains over western Visayas, Nimaropa, and Calabarzon. And under these conditions, scattered to widespread flooding and landslides remain likely in the identified areas. Seafarers and those with small sea craft are also not allowed to venture out in the open seas of areas under tropical cyclones, wind signal number 2 and 1, as well as in the seaboards of southern Luzon, seaboards of Visayas, and the northern seaboard of Mindanao due to high waves. And severe tropical storm Maring will continue to move westward towards the center of West Philippine Sea, towards the southern part of China. And improved weather condition will be felt over northern Luzon starting tomorrow, but the effects of the southwest monsoon will still be prevalent there. Carmina?
Thanks a lot. Pag-asa weather forecast, Ariel Rojas there joining us on the line. Take care, Ariel, and to you and the rest of the team there. Thanks for all that you do. The World Health Organization recommends an additional COVID-19 jab for immunocompromised individuals due to their high risk of breakthrough infections. The WHO Strategic Advisory Group of Experts says these individuals should be offered any shot from the vaccines listed under emergency use.
That's a distinct thing from giving additional doses, booster doses, to people who have had an adequate primary response to vaccination, and the argument that that primary response might decline over time and therefore needs to be boosted to get up to back where it was or even beyond where it was. At this time, and as the Director General has called for, a moratorium on booster doses for the general population, because giving those booster doses to individuals who already have had the benefit of a primary response is, as has been explained before, like putting two life jackets on somebody and leaving other people without any life jacket.
WHO experts also recommend people over 60 who received Sinopharm and Sinovac shots to get an additional dose 1 to 3 months after completing their schedule. That's amid studies in Latin America that their protection from the virus wanes over time. Well, here at home, the Philippine Food and Drug Administration sees no need for COVID-19 booster shots yet. The director of the FDA, Director General Eric Domingo, says his agency has found no waning effects in the shots administered in the country so far. He notes only 516 breakthrough infections were recorded out of over 20 million fully vaccinated Filipinos. Domingo adds 90% of breakthrough cases were observed in the 18 to 29 age group. None of them have died.
Ibig sabihin, at this time, wala pa po talagang pangangailangan na magbigay ng booster dahil hindi naman tayo nakakakita pa talaga ng waning effect po ng vaccine. Dahil kung at fifth month, makita po natin na bumababa na yung kanyang protection, dapat dumadami po no, yung nagkakaroon ng breakthrough infection. Pero hindi pa po natin nakikita yun at this time.
The Philippines recorded 8,292 COVID-19 infections Monday, the lowest daily tally since August 5th. The Department of Health also reported 36 new deaths, the lowest in about 2 months. The DOH's COVID data system, however, has recently been encountering glitches. But the DOH says the decline in cases in the country is not artificial. Officials also believe infections will continue to drop if the alert level 4 in Metro Manila is extended.
For these. Looking at the projected cases by October 31, with a shorter detection to isolation time, daily cases may decrease to 1,731 cases if alert level 4 is continued, while 3,211 to 3,605 daily cases are expected if the National Capital Region is de-escalated to alert level 3. However, if detection to isolation time is again prolonged, just like what we have observed in August, daily cases may decrease to 2,195 daily cases under alert level 4, while 4,061 to 4,557 daily cases is expected if alert level 3 is imposed.
In other news, the Office of the Ombudsman adjuncts the graft complaint against former tourism chief Juan Dateo and several others stemming from an ad deal between the agency and the state-run media network. ABS-CBN correspondent Adrian Ayalen now joins us. For an update, Adrian, go ahead.
Yes, the Office of the Ombudsman has dismissed the graft complaint filed by its field investigation office against former Tourism Secretary Juan Datulfo Teo on the use of government funds for 66 million tourism ads which aired on her brother's program. In a resolution approved by Ombudsman Samuel Martirez on October 6, 2021, the criminal complaint against Teo was dismissed for lack of cause. Aside from Teo, named as respondents in the FIO complaint were other government officials at the time of transaction. DOT Executive Assistant Arlene Mangkaw, PTV General Manager Antonio Apololo, PTV Airtime Management Head Rosario, President of Fish Operations Office Administrative Officer Melma Francisco, and the Ombudsman said that this only evidence on record, BTAG Media complied with its contractual obligations to the program Kilos Pronto. In the total amount paid BTAG Media, $66.18 million, the memorandum of agreement between the two and the memorandum of agreement between the DOT and ATV. The resolution noted that they said in her counter affidavit that she did not know during the entire transaction that the program was about controlled by her brother. They also stated that while she and Bienvenido are siblings, they are not close to each other and or see each other.
Adrian, I'm sorry to do this, but you're coming in choppy. We're going to have to cut the report now and get back to you as soon as we establish a better connection. Our correspondent Adrian Ayalin there joining us on the line. We're going to try and get him back on the line regarding this important story. Thanks again, Adrian. Now, going back to our top story on the wrath of severe tropical storm Maring, we're now joined by the spokesperson of the National Disaster Risk Reduction and Management Council, Mark Timbal. Mark, nice to see you again. Thank you for joining us this afternoon. Sorry,
Ms. Pagana, good morning, and to our viewers as well.
All right, so what's the latest data do you have? We know that it has it's a severe tropical storm. Maring is moving away from the country, but it's still bringing some rains over parts of the country that it's affecting. What's the data that you have right now in terms of the damage caused by this weather disturbance, Mark?
Can you hear me? Yes, Ms. Carmina. The NDRMC is currently in an ongoing coordination with our regional councils affected by...
Okay, Mark. Okay, we're experiencing some technical difficulty. We just lost NDRMC spokesperson Mark Timbal there on Zoom. We're going to try and get him back. As you can just imagine, this weather disturbance has affected lives. connectivity as well. And it's been quite difficult, not just for the news teams, but also for agencies to really get the info coming out from these affected areas, as you can see from the footage that we're showing you right now. Hopefully, though, that things are looking up for the areas affected by this weather disturbance as it moves away from the country. Again, we're going to try and get him back on the line, and the RMC spokesperson, Mark Dimbal, there. But until we do that, we're going to take a break now. Up ahead, Fitch Solutions sees elevated uncertainty in the Philippines as they see the prospect of a late presidential bid from Davao City Mayor Sara Duterte Carpio. You're watching Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Stay with us. We have back with us a spokesperson of the National Disaster Risk Reduction and Management Council, Mark Dimbal. He's going to give us the latest on the damage caused by severe tropical storm Maring. Mark, nice to have you with us again. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Carmina. Our operations are ongoing in the northern provinces, specifically in Ilocos Sur as well as in La Union. In the coordination this morning, we received information that we have some victims already, casualties, but these are still being validated. We have 9 people that have been reported as fatalities, 3 from La Trinidad Benguet from a landslide incident, 1 from Ampukao in Togon, Benguet. We also have 1 drowning incident in Claveria, Cagayan, and drowning incident in a flash flood in Nara, Palawan. These are still being validated, along with 2 injured persons and 11 missing persons. We were able to monitor 15 flooding incidents as well as landslides happening in Region 2, in Region 1, and also in the Cordillera. We have received reports of ongoing operations for search and rescue in areas that are experiencing heavy flooding. Since last night, the NDRMC was receiving requests for rescue, and these were all referred to the local government units and regional disaster councils for Ilocos Sur and La Union. The good thing is that all our rescue teams are already on the scene. The local government unit rescue teams are there, and our armed forces counterparts are also providing support. We also received information of families requesting for rescue in Narvacan in Ilocos Sur, and our teams are already there. We're just making sure that the situation is safe enough for the deployment of these rescue teams to be able to get those families.
Yeah, Mark, I do have to ask you, since we're also experiencing some problems in communication. When you get this info, though, are you also experiencing problems regarding that, like getting the necessary info into the headquarters? Are you having problems contacting your people on the ground to get the info that you need?
And so far, Ms. Carmina, we don't have that problem. We have multiple communication channels that we're using. So we're receiving the data through phone calls, radio, as well as the transfer documents online. So these are being received on a regular basis.
Do we have any areas that are isolated as we speak?
So far, in the report of our counterparts in the regions, all areas are accounted for. The rescue teams are already deployed. The relief items have already been prepositioned as well. So there is an ongoing road clearing operation, especially in the Cordillera, to ensure that the transport of items, augmentation items, can continue. The roads in the Cordillera, some roads in the Cordillera, have been closed as a precautionary measure because they are landslide prone, while some have been closed due to the actual occurrence of a landslide and while road clearing operations are being done.
The prepositioned items, though, that's good for how many days?
Usually a family food pack is good for 2 to 3 days. And families that have been that proceeded to the evacuation center will be receiving that within the first 24 hours after their arrival. So the items in the custody of the local government units are already available. The regional stockpiles are also ready for deployment, and the national stockpile is more than enough to support these operations in case the local governments would be requesting assistance. We have more than 1 billion pesos worth of family food packs, standby funding, and other items that are ready for deployment in case.
Is there anything, though, Mark, that's proving to be quite a challenge for you as you deal with the aftermath of Maring?
The assessment of the damages continue. Our preparations, Ms. Hermina, actually started Thursday last week. And part of the preparations include the possible utilization of air assets to conduct the assessment, the damage assessment in the area. The only difficulty, which is a common difficulty in search and rescue operations, is to ensure the safety of the rescuers in the actual operation. We have heard that the flood waters in some areas are violent, and our rescuers are making sure that when they deploy to get the people stuck in the communities, they would not be endangered as well. So the utilization of other assets are also being identified to make sure that these people will be rescued on time.
Which areas are these, Mark? And how many people are we talking about here?
I don't have the actual detail of that message, but we received information that there was a family in Narvacan, one community in Narvacan in Ocosul, who have requested for rescue. The team is already there. They're just making sure that they would not be it would be safer for the deployment of the rescue teams to get those families. We have enough equipment for that, but we just need to make sure that there will be no untoward incidents during the process of extracting those families.
Lots of flash floods being reported, news coming into the newsroom. Mark, what's assessment of the NDRMC? Are these areas really flood prone, or are you seeing areas that were previously okay but now flooded due to Typhoon Maring?
Yes, those two items that you mentioned are the probabilities in this scenario, Ms. Carmina. Because what happened was during our meeting last Saturday here at the NDRMC, our counterpart in the Mines and Geosciences Bureau of the DNR identified more than 1,000 communities that are flood-prone and landslide-prone. Mm-hmm. Some of these communities may have not experienced major flooding in the previous years, and because of the rainfall amounts of Maring, they would have experienced flooding at this point. But all local governments have received notice of this possibility as early as Thursday last week, and the preparations have been done along with the prepositioning of relief items, rescue teams, and road clearing operations.
All right, so they weren't caught flat-footed.
Yes, that would be a problem with the NDRMT if we did not actually do our job. We make sure that at the earliest possible time that a threat is identified, all the preparations would have been set forth prior to its arrival.
All right. We're going to have to leave it at that. Mark Timbal there, spokesperson of the NDRRMC. Thanks again for joining us today. Take care.
Thank you very much, ma'am.
Rescue operations were conducted in some areas in Cagayan as some people were stranded due to the floods. Harris Julio is there, and he joins us now with an update. Harris, go ahead.
The weather condition in Cagayan has started to improve today as compared to yesterday, wherein the province experienced heavy to intense rain caused by tropical storm Maring. I am talking to some residents through social media a while ago, and they said it is just windy right now in some parts of Cagayan. According to the Office of the Civil Defense Region 2, about 18 villages or barangays in 19 towns of Cagayan have experienced flooding. in the town of Gonzaga, authorities had to mobilize or go out at around 9:30 last night to rescue residents who were trapped in the rising floodwater. About 35 families comprised of 137 individuals were rescued in the villages of Smart, Progressive, Flourishing, and Paradise. The local government unit of Santa Teresita also shared some photos of their situation at around 6 a.m. today, wherein you can see several houses still submerged in flood water. But the water already started to subside, according to the local government unit of Santa Teresita. This is also the case in other municipalities that were inundated, according to OCD Region 2. In Pamplona, the local government unit already allowed evacuees to go home after the flood water has receded. ABC President Eric Nunez of Calayan also said that evacuees are now returning to their homes. About 380 individuals in the villages of Dadao, Centro, and Poblacion were evacuated yesterday due to flooding. While in Bugay and Santa Teresita, teachers have to deal with the thick mud that settled in their classrooms after the flood water subsided. Based on the initial data of OCD Region 2, a total of 2,820 families comprised of 13,819 individuals were affected by flooding in Cagayan. Region 2 is still consolidating all the information regarding the damage to infrastructure and agriculture. Meanwhile, the Magat Dam Administration here in Ramon Isabela announced earlier that it will open its spillway gates at around 3 p.m. today to release some water. And that's our report for now. Back to you.
Thanks a lot, Harris. Take care and you keep safe. Our correspondent there, Harris Julio. Moving on, Senator Panfilo Lacson questions the Social Welfare and Development Department's claim it has distributed 94% of social amelioration funds. The DSWD, during a Senate panel hearing on its 2022 budget, claimed it has given aid to more than 717,000 beneficiaries out of a targeted 761,000. But Lacson says the numbers just don't add up. Lacson claims the DSWD only dispersed about 80% of its social amelioration funds. The agency says the discrepancy came from cutting its previous target of more than 855,000 beneficiaries in January to the current goal. Senators also drawing parallels to the agency's contract with mobile wallet StarPay, with government's allegedly anomalous contract with formerly pharmaceuticals. And we're now joined by presidential candidate Senator Panfilo Lacson to talk about what happened at the hearing yesterday. Senator, good afternoon. Thank you for joining us today.
Yes, thank you, Kamina. Good afternoon.
All right. So first, let's talk about the explanation of the DSWD. Do you buy that they just changed their target?
Yeah, when you change your targets and you adjust your targets, you deny some people of getting their aid from the government. That's a problem. Just to, you know, massage the numbers, you adjust the figures, and that's a problem, actually.
You called them out yesterday. You said it was poor planning. Also, when they engaged with StarPay, is it really poor planning, or is it something else?
Well, at the very least, it was poor planning. Why? Because they found out later that 70% of the intended beneficiaries didn't have mobile phones or have defective mobile phones. Had they anticipated that? Because, you know, they're using the data that was available to them since 2015. In fact, when we were deliberating on the Bayanihan 1, the social amelioration program, I was the one who questioned why the government was using 2015 data on their four-piece beneficiaries. But that has not been corrected up to now. They should they should adjust their figures and update their figures. So because if you plan poorly, there will really be some problems, you know.
Mm. You're also a proponent of zero-based budgeting, but you also called, you not only called the DSWD's engagement poor planning, you also said it was reactive. Now, when it comes to zero-based budgeting, Senator, how can that not be reactive as well? Explain that to us.
No, zero budgeting, it means, you know, it's being practiced by big private corporations. No? Zero budgeting or zero-based budgeting means that each and every agency will justify and defend each and every EAP, meaning each and every program, activity, project that they want funded. So what's happening now is debt ceiling. What the DBM or the DBCC, the Development Budget Coordinating Committee, is doing is they give each agency a budget ceiling. And they will work within that budget ceiling. So what's happening is they plan poorly because they want to really reach that ceiling or even surpass that ceiling. So pagka nagkatawaran, hagit pa rin nila yung budget ceiling. So we want to change that. We want to introduce a budget reform process wherein there should be meticulous and tedious planning in the different programs, activities, and projects that will be submitted by the different agencies. The planning should emanate from the local development councils, from the barangays, municipalities, cities, provincial, all the way up to the RDC, or the Regional Development Council. And the Regional Development Council will or recommendation will be the basis for the DBM and the DBCC to craft the National Expenditure Program.
How will this affect the speed by which these services based on these budgets will be delivered, Senator?
Sorry, I didn't quite hear that.
Baka po bumagal yung delivery of services kung bawat proyekto kailangan nila i-defend, bawat budget kailangan i-defend.
No, they have one whole year to prepare the to plan for the infrastructure projects and other social services that will be inputted into the National Expenditure Program. So it's just a matter of, you know, doing it the right way. Because as it is now, it is the same thing. It goes through the local development councils all the way up to the RDC. But then, you know, district representatives, they're supposed to be members of the local development councils. They can send their representatives at the barangay level. They can discuss their projects in their districts, in the municipal development councils, and so forth and so on. What's happening now is the district representatives don't mind discussing their projects within their districts, within local development councils, because after all, when the National Expenditure Program is transmitted to the Congress, to the House of Representatives, they will just augment or insert or amend what was submitted to them or to us in Congress by the executive branch. That's the problem. So there's a big disconnect between the national budget and the needs and priorities of the local government units.
Correct. Kasi nga ho, parang yung sinasabi po ninyo, it's not just the whole of government approach when it comes to the budget, but also the stakeholders, the people themselves, you know, have a say in the crafting.
Institutionalized na yan, Carmina. No? Pagka sa local development councils, yung mga civil society organizations participate in the discussion of the projects, the programs, at saka yung activities doon sa kanilang localities. That should be the case because it should involve the constituents in the discussion of the budget within their localities, and it goes all the way up. Yun ang budget process talaga. But what's happening now, talagang dictated na from the central government, kaya nagkakaroon tayo ng malaking unutilized or unused appropriations year in and year out because there's poor planning. And the local government units, hindi na sila nakakasali, nakaka-participate doon sa pagpaplano kung ano yung mga activities, programs, and projects doon sa kanilang mga localities. So, maraming mga actual incidents ano, wherein yung needs and priorities of the local government units are not being addressed because I hate to say this, but you know, in Congress, even in the Senate, sometimes nagiging contractor-driven or supplier-driven yung mga projects ang nai-insert or yung na-amend pagka nag-deliberate kami sa budget, hindi tugma do sa priorities at saka sa needs ng mga local government units. After all, lahat naman ng projects natin, babagsak yan talaga sa local government units, di ba? Whether it's NCR, Region 4, doon talagang punta. Bakit hindi sila kasali sa pagpaplano?
Kaya nga nakikita natin yung sinasabi nyo nga, Senator, there's a huge disconnect. Ang daming mga basketball court, ang daming kung mga ano-ano dyan na hindi naman kailangan. Pero yung talagang kailangan, like barangay health halls, fully equipped at that, wala. Healthcare facilities, wala.
Yeah, alam mo Carmina, yung budget ng preventive maintenance ng DPWH, that runs into tens of billions, if not hundreds of billions of pesos. Ano? Sometimes you would see hindi pa worn out yung kalsada, concrete pa, pero and yet, nakita mo, di ba, din niya jackhammer. Sayang ang pera. Whereas, ang dami pang mga dirt roads, mga unpaved roads na dapat i-concrete or i-asphalt. Because nga, yun ang gusto ng contractor na gawin.
But Senator, there was supposed to be a hearing today. Maiba lang tayo ng kaunti. There was supposed to be the resumption of this Blue Ribbon Committee hearing today, but it was postponed. What was the reason given?
I guess Senator Gordon is busy preparing or crafting the interim committee report. Because we have conducted, I think, 11 hearings already. And he indicated that he wanted to submit muna an interim committee report instead of a full committee report.
All right. And how, during the last hearing, when the memo was handed down already preventing cabinet officials from attending the hearing, how difficult was it for you guys to get to the truth, given that there was non-participation of some cabinet officials, you also had the retraction of Ms. Mago, you also had the non-participation of Lincoln Ong? How difficult was that for the committee?
Well, there'll be a dearth of information, you know, because we're relying on government agencies to submit certain documentary requirements to complete our inquiry or our investigation. Ang problema, binawalan, not just cabinet secretaries, but all executive officials are now being prohibited from attending our this specific public hearing only. Hindi nga kasama yung ibang Blue Ribbon committee hearings, hindi rin kasama yung ibang public hearings being conducted by the different committees. It is just you know, specific dito sa formally investigation or sa PSDBM investigation.
Tingin niyo ba you're going to get to the bottom of things given this memo, given the current situation? Or wala na?
What we're trying to do. Yeah, that's what we're trying to do. Kaya lang, yun nga, limited na yung information na makukuha, especially from government agencies. We will have to be more resourceful in getting documents somewhere else.
Right. You're also a proponent of public servants being excluded from the bank secrecy law. If that were in place when this hearing was being conducted, how could that have helped in establishing the money trail and establishing the truth?
Very much, because I filed this I think under two congresses in the past, but it never moved. Hindi ito natakil sa committee level. So kung merong ganon, mas madali, because we can actually ask the banks, no, to divulge to us kung ano yung movements ng funds from, you know, the accounts of government officials.
There's a reason why it hasn't moved, Senator.
I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine, you know. Two congresses ko pinail yan eh.
Ano po yan?
Two congresses ko na naifa-file, pero talagang wala. Walang ano. I don't know if I filed it the third time eh.
All right. Senator, it's been a month since you launched your presidential campaign. I want to get into that right now. How do you respond to those who say that the third way that you're espousing is really neither here nor there, when, as some have said, it should be clear by now where you should stand. So what do you and your running mate, Senate President Tito Soto, stand for that is separate and distinct from the other contenders, Senator?
No, we're pro-Filipino. No, we don't, we're not after, political colors. When we criticize, there's basis for criticizing. When we praise, there's also basis for praising. It's not as if when you belong to a particular group or party, whatever the other party does is wrong. Ganun kasi yung ano, yun ang political divide eh. And we don't want to join the fray, so to speak, pagdating sa mga issues. And sa amin, we're always issue-based, Hindi naman lahat ng ginagawa ng administration mali. Hindi na naman lahat ng ginagawa nila tama. So doon lang kami sa tama. Kung doon lang kami sa mali, magpupuna.
So you don't believe, Senator, that President Duterte is the issue?
No, the whole government is the issue as far as we're concerned. The biggest problem of this country is government. And the solution lies in the face of the problem itself. And it is called good government. Kasi pagbag yung government, wala na. Ang laki na ng problema natin lahat. And this has been going on. Sometimes, most of the problems that we have are systemic. Sometimes at a point of being institutionalized na. But we're not doing anything about it. For example, sa Bureau of Customs lang, di ba? We have already passed the CMTA, the Customs Modernization Tarification Act. And yet, computerized, but we're not automated. So, nandiyan pa rin yung human intervention. Kung fully automated yung Bureau of Customs, Bureau of Internal Revenue, and halimbawa, digitalize yung ating government bureaucracy, and there's interoperability between and among the different government agencies from national to local, ang laki pati ng matitipid natin, mawawala pa yung corruption. But why are we not doing this? The other ASEAN countries are already computerized and automated. Lahat ng kanilang government functionaries may interoperability. Tayo, hanggang ngayon, katakot-takot yung human intervention kaya hindi natin magamot yung issue ng corruption dito sa ating bayan.
Senator, ang punang-punang iba, bakit mahirap para sa inyong dalawa ni Senator Tito Soto na sabihin na si Duterte ang problema? Katulad ng gustong sabihin ng iba na sabihin ninyo?
Well, kanya-kanyang opinion. Si President Duterte, sometimes may mga ginagawa siya na siya talaga yung problema. For example, itong Parmali, I'll cite to you a specific example. Yung Parmali, why would he issue the memorandum order prohibiting government officials from the executive branch from attending? He is the problem. But he's not always the problem. That's what I'm saying. Sometimes, may problema rin yung opposition because they're not offering any solution. They keep on criticizing government without offering any solution. So, kami, ang position namin is always, we're on the side where we can help and we can be pro-Filipino. That's what we are.
What's more important to you now, Senator, that you win or that this administration and all its possible permutations come to an end?
Well, hindi naman kailan nakatuon ka sa isang administration. Past, present, future. Pag merong doing, kailangan may accountability. Why pick on a particular group or particular person? This is our country, and we should deal with all wrongdoings in government, not just one particular group or political group. Mm-hmm. Kasi, alam mo, extremes yung nangyayari. Pagka-opposition, everything that the administration does is wrong. And everything that the opposition does is correct. Yung sa administration naman, everything that the opposition does is destructive, saka mali. Everything that they do, tama. Hindi ba pwedeng doon lang tayo sa tama? Hindi yung grupo lang yung tinitingnan.
Ito po ba yung naging problema nyo in your talks with the office of the vice president?
That's another matter. Because yung discussion namin, hindi naman to nag-involve ng which group to side on, or to side with. Hindi naman yun naging problema. Ang naging problema is, you know, walang meeting of the minds, because I initially, the first meeting that we had, you know, I offered a sure unification formula that was rejected outright by the Vice President. And then when we met for the second time, binabalik yung unang suggestion, eh, sabi ko, that was before, because at this point in time, we cannot anymore withdraw from this phase, because, you know, so many people have gotten involved already. And sabi ko nga kay Senator Frank Drilon, wala naman ako iharap to sa mga tao sa ganitong punto na ngayon pa kami sasabihin, atras na lang kami in favor of some candidates. But before, hindi ganun karami yung, hindi ganun ang situation. That's why I offered it. But it was, when we
are
were...
Are you saying, Senator, that they were the ones who missed the opportunity?
Yes. Bluntly, I would say that. That was a missed opportunity, but, you know, hindi sa amin ang galing yung pag-miss ng opportunity.
Meron po nagsasabi that, Senator, meron po nagsasabi that the sure way to win the elections next year is for a Lenny-Soto tandem to emerge, completely leaving you out of the picture. What do you say regarding that?
That was an insult, you know. To say that right in my face, you know, mabuti, I did notice, ano, when that was mentioned. And when Senate President Soto told me about it, I felt insulted.
So sinabi yun sa inyo?
I didn't notice, but Senate President Soto told me when it was mentioned. And it was, I think, parang motion ng hand motion actually yung nag-indicate noon, which I didn't notice.
And you felt insulted because,
yeah, if I told you, Carmina, suppose you were in my shoes, sabihin ko sa'yo na umatras ka na lang, silang dalawa na lang magsama nung katandem mo, wouldn't you feel insulted?
So what would have been the perfect opportunity and the perfect solution to it? Pero ngayon kasi wala na, hindi ba? Pero sa pananaw nyo, ano ba dapat yung nangyari?
Yeah, nung una, alam mo, pinakamadaling pag-usapan yung concept. Concept lang yung unification eh. I introduced the mechanics, no, kung paano gagawin, how to operationalize, which was, you know, rejected.
Okay. We're running out of time. They're telling me to wrap up. I just have a few more questions for you, Senator. First, you take pride in being part of the so-called macho bloc in the Senate. How will this machismo dictate the ways of your administration should you win?
Well, simply, we have, you know, we're consulting with the so-called experts, you know, business sector, academia, even agriculture, health sector. Marami kami kinakausap because, you know, to prepare for the presidency and even vice presidency, hindi naman ito overnight na pagkapanalo mo, saka ka pala magpiprepare. So that's where we are right now. You know? And we've been doing this since the time that we launched our candidacy. Hindi pwedeng, you know, madalian, pag nandiyan ka na, saka ka pala magpiprepare. And I hope the other candidates are doing the same, you know, because after all, this is the country's future that is at stake. You know?
Talking about that, at a time when love for country is being asked of each and every one of us, really, during this time of the pandemic, let me ask you, when was the last time that you showed love for country, Senator? And what did you do?
Since the time that I was in public service, when I entered the Philippine Military Academy, yan ang in-inculcate sa amin, love of country. And since then, hindi naman kami nag-waver. That's the reason why, you know, up to this point, no, in my career, no, that love of country still remains in my heart.
But since a young police officer, to the time that you headed the force, to the time that you headed the anti-crime commission, you've always been known as an enforcer of the law and not necessarily a human rights defender. What does What place does human rights have in your platform of governance should you win?
I mean, ito na lang. Ako yung nag-defend ng budget ng Commission on Human Rights sa Senate for the longest time. You know? And you can ask the commissioners how I would support them in terms of their measly budget. I had consistently augmented their budget para makapagtrabaho sila ng mas maayos. Yung Anti-Terrorism Act that I defended on the floor, no? That is the only law passed in the history of the Philippines wherein after the arrest, within 24 hours, yung arresting officer must report to the Commission on Human Rights that such person was arrested in such place, at such time, and so forth and so on. Not only the Commission on Human Rights, kailangan i-report pa sa nearest judge kung saan nahuli yung tao.
All right. Of course, the goal in the end is to win. Pero kung hindi ho kayo ang mananalo, Senator Lacson, sino sa tingin nyo ang dapat manalo kung hindi kayo?
I don't want to comment on that. Ano? Kami, nag-usap kami ni Senate President Soto. Ang aming posture will be to, you know, to rise on our own merit, ano? Raise the level of discourse from gutter politics to issue-based campaign or issue-based discussions. Doon kami. We will refuse to comment on other competitors in this May 2022 campaign.
Sino na lang hindi dapat manalo? In terms of platform of governance, ano dapat ang hindi manalo?
Answer that, Carmina. No, ayoko maging judgmental. Sabi ko nga, kami, yung aming gagawin, kami na lang yung magka-campaign para sarili namin. Hindi ito to the detriment of the other candidates. So, you know, I'm sorry I cannot answer your question.
Fair enough. Senator Pantolo Lacson there joining us on the line. Thank you for joining us this afternoon. Take care and keep safe.
Thank you. Keep safe.
All right, we're going to take a break now. Still ahead, former Philippine health secretaries and dozens of medical groups voice their support for the Senate's probe on government's allegedly anomalous pandemic deals. This is Dateline Philippines. Stay with us here on ANC. Back with more news. Six former Philippine health secretaries and dozens of medical groups call on President Duterte not to obstruct the Senate probe into government's pandemic supply deals. Duterte earlier issued a memorandum barring cabinet officials from attending the hearings. Former Health Secretary Esperanza Cabral says this was the last straw for many health workers who were the recipients of allegedly expired face shields.
Over the last 19 months or so, health professionals and allied medical professionals have seen with increasing dismay the poor COVID response that our government has towards this pandemic. When the issue of Pharmaly came and the hearings in the Senate were being prevented from getting to the truth because the president actually said that the government officials should not go there anymore. We felt that we needed to express our indignation and our frustration and anger. Enough is enough, and let's do what is right.
Medical professionals also want the Justice Department to conduct its own investigation into the controversy involving Pharmaly Pharmaceuticals. The Philippines logs its lowest number of newborns in 34 years. The Commission on Population says only 1.5 million babies were registered in 2020. The culprit, the pandemic. Philippine Commission on Population and Development Executive Director Juan Antonio Perez III says most people are now exerting extra effort to avoid unplanned pregnancies. He adds lockdowns also played a major role in the decline in numbers as more couples held off their wedding plans.
Families are getting smaller. And with the pandemic, the pressure of the pandemic has led to, you know, Filipinos delaying pregnancy, delaying family formation as part of their, let's say, response to a difficult situation. We think this trend will continue beyond the pandemic because economically we will not be recovering for several years. No? So people will continue to be under pressure economically and will need family planning to avoid large families, to avoid using up their savings.
The solution sees lingering uncertainty over the Philippines' upcoming elections, even after the filing of candidacies. The think tank believes there remains a strong possibility President Duterte's daughter, Davao City Mayor Sara Duterte Carpio, could still run for president via substitution. Meanwhile, Fitch Solutions says those who formalized their presidential bids were not much of a surprise. It adds most of them are likely to continue the policies of President Duterte, such as his focus on infrastructure development and the war against drugs. For market analysts, such considerations have yet to be priced in by investors.
Among investors with regard to any political exercise in the Philippines usually sets in April. If there's a landslide, should it happen, we're seeing the market usually rally because there is an immediate political clarity. But when there is disputes happening with regard to the election result, then we can see a lot of more volatility.
And that'll do it for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, Dateline Philippines podcast is on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Play back this newscast too on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on ANC.